This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On Tuesday, voters in 11 states approved amendments that define marriage as being between one man and one woman. They arose in response to the developments in Massachusetts and in San Francisco earlier this year. The Massachusetts Supreme Court ruled that the state constitution provides gay men and lesbians with the right to marry. Later, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom issued marriage licenses to gay couples who lined up down the steps of City Hall until the California courts ruled that he was in violation of state law. Today, gay activists face tough questions about whether they push too far and too fast, while opponents of gay marriage look ahead to new battlegrounds. In this hour of Talk of the Nation, we'll look at what was in those amendments, where they stand now, and we'll check in with activists on both sides. If you oppose gay marriage, do you see it as a single issue, or do you feel gay rights in general have gone too far? And what's next? And if you're a supporter of gay rights, where does the fight go from here? Join the conversation. Our number in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us here in Studio 3A is Kenneth Jost, the Supreme Court editor for CQ Press. And thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Neil.
And I mispronounced your name. It's Jost, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay.
Thanks.
What was the content of these amendments? They varied in some states.
There were 11 amendments on the ballot on Tuesday. Two others voted on in Louisiana and Missouri earlier in the election cycle. All of them define marriage as a relationship between one man and one woman. Most of them go further and also prevent any legal recognition of same-sex relationships in terms of a civil union. Some even might go so far as to prevent the enforcement of a truly private contract between two members of a couple who say, you know, a medical power of attorney, for instance.
Does it affect anyone other than gay men and lesbians?
Some could affect heterosexual domestic partnerships. Yes.
Okay. So what we used to call common law marriage.
Yes.
Okay. Did voters understand that that it might extend beyond the issue of gay marriage alone?
Perhaps in some states, perhaps not in others. In Georgia, for instance, the description on the ballot just said define marriage to be between one man and one woman, but mm-hmm. the details of the amendment do in fact go further. That's the basis for a planned challenge to the amendment that passed in Georgia.
And is Georgia the only place where these amendments to the state constitutions are going to be challenged?
The Louisiana amendment, which was approved in September by a decisive margin, is also under challenge on the grounds that it covered two subjects, which is against the way state constitutional amendments normally pass.
And bring us up to date on the situation in Massachusetts. My understanding was that the Supreme Court there directed the legislature to address the situation.
The Supreme Court of Massachusetts said gay marriage is legal must be legalized in this state, and we give the legislature 6 months to act accordingly. The legislature didn't act, and when the deadline passed, gay marriage became legal in Massachusetts by judicial decree. The state legislature convened as a constitutional convention to consider a proposed constitutional amendment to overturn the Goodridge decision. That's the name of the case. And the amendment passed narrowly, but must be passed by a successive constitutional convention to convene next year.
Mm-hmm. The legislature that was just elected on Tuesday.
That's correct. And the gay rights advocates think they did well in the election. In particular, the Speaker of the House, who was a major proponent of the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, he retired for other reasons. But they think that the amendment will not gain the necessary second approval to go before the voters in Massachusetts.
So if it is approved a second time, then there would be a referendum in the state of Massachusetts.
That's correct.
And it could not be, the law would not change until after that.
That's correct.
Now, in addition, because of the situation in Massachusetts, some states are also drafting laws to bar recognition of marriages, gay marriages that might be enacted legally in other states.
In other states, that's right. And many of the constitutional amendments that were approved on Tuesday included that provision explicitly.
And this that part of the amendments, if not other parts, could end up in federal court and before the Supreme Court eventually.
Eventually, there will come a time when this issue hits the U.S. Supreme Court, no doubt about it.
And as we look back at what happened on Tuesday, this issue being on the ballot in 11 states, as you mentioned, it was voted earlier in two other states. But in those 11 states, particularly, I think, in the state of Ohio, this was seen as a critical factor in the election.
It was certainly an important factor, perhaps the critical factor in Ohio in President Bush's victory. The opponents, the gay rights advocates, in other words, felt all along that the major purpose of these ballot measures was to bring out social conservatives to vote for Republican candidates, including the president. Mm-hmm. The proponents of the initiative, the opponents of gay marriage, denied that. They said, this is really about marriage. This is about the majority's view that marriage needs to be reserved for heterosexual couples.
And one other thing is President Bush's decision earlier this year to propose a constitutional, an amendment to the United States Constitution. That was seen as a factor in his standing, seen as keeping his promises to the Christian community.
It was seen as an issue that he was using. And even though it was pretty widely agreed that it would not win approval in either the Senate or the House by the necessary two-thirds margin for a federal constitutional amendment, and indeed it failed mm-hmm. in both the Senate and the House.
And will not be taken up again in the lame duck session of this Congress, but could come back in the next Congress.
Absolutely. And in the Senate, where the vote was 48-50 against bringing it up, against shutting off debate, the prospect now is for a much closer vote. It would seem that it would have a majority vote, but still maybe not two-thirds.
As we, I guess, all know by now, when people left the voting booths on Tuesday, they told exit pollers, 18-20% of them, about that moral values were the main thing that they voted on, and that was the single largest issue, more important than the war in Iraq, the economy, the war on terror. How did the exit polls suggest that they saw this issue of gay marriage specifically?
Exit polls indicated that there was, very roughly speaking, one-third of the electorate that's just absolutely opposed to gay marriage or any recognition of a gay relationship. Another third inclined toward some form of civil union or other legal recognition of same-sex relationships, and another third or so more than willing to support gay marriage.
Now, as we look ahead to when this issue comes before the Supreme Court, the most recent decision addresses these issues went to the issue of anti-sodomy laws. I think it was in the state of Texas.
That's right. Lawrence v. Texas was the case decided in June 2002 by a 6-3 vote. The Supreme Court said that states cannot make it a crime for gay people to have sex.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Ken Jost of CQ Press. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with John, who's with us on the line from Elizabethtown, Kentucky.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. John, I'm sorry, John, your cell phone is very difficult to hear. Can you try it again and just move to a slightly different place? I think John's cell phone has left us altogether. We apologize. Call back if you get a better connection there, John. Let's go now to Wade. Wade's calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Good day to you.
Good day to you.
You know, I really feel at this point that, you know, there was a great article in a local paper here in Ann Arbor called Between the Lines. It's a Michigan newspaper for the LGBT community. There was an interview with Kerry, and he had a lot of good comments about the recognition slowing it down, really not looking to marriage as being something that we should be advocating for at this point. And I really agree with that. The term marriage is not so important to me at 25 years old as are the rights that I should be allowed with a partner for perhaps my partner's children in the jobs. I mean, people at the University of Michigan who have domestic partnerships be them homosexual or heterosexual, could be losing all of their benefits. Elsewhere in the state, people will be losing the benefits. Kalamazoo has some city code that allows for a domestic partnership. You know, I feel like it's really kind of run a little bit too far, and we lost sight as a queer community as to what was important right now.
And that's a criticism, Wade, that I think a lot of people are hearing today, that this the issue, what happened in Massachusetts and San Francisco, was provocative and forced these amendments or provoked people in states to put these amendments on the ballot.
No, this is very true. You know, I think it's really important to ease your way into things. I think too often it's just like when you're trying to help a young child, you know, if you tell somebody no or say specifically you must do this, you know, there's a strong push against that, as opposed to kind of saying, oh, well, you know, I would really like to see this happen and I don't know, just make it a little bit easier on people to make their way into that understanding.
Mm-hmm. Wade, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
Ken Jost, he was talking about domestic partnerships. Is that the same as civil unions?
No, not exactly. The Vermont court, which created the term civil unions, defined it to be in all respects equivalent to marriage. A domestic partnership would be one step down and defined perhaps, you know, right by right, responsibility by responsibility.
And when he's talking about the rights that you might have in a domestic partnership versus a marriage, these include visitation in hospitals and parenting and that sort of thing.
Yes, certainly. Marriage brings with it certain rights under federal law, under state law, that civil union and domestic partnership wouldn't necessarily bring.
Let's get another caller on the line. Peggy's with us from Bristol, Idaho.
No, actually, Bristol, Indiana.
Indiana. It says ID on my little card here. I apologize,
that's
Peggy.
Okay. That's okay. I'm calling from a very conservative area of northern Indiana, and I have a gay son. And it isn't what we wanted for his life, but we love him anyway. And what we want for him is to be happy, and we want him to be loved, and we want him to have a partner that he can love and be loved with for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very conservative Christian area. We live in a large Amish community, and so it's difficult, I'm sure, like every other place in the nation, to deal with these kinds of issues. But this particular issue strikes home in this particular population. But for our family, we just want him to be happy and be loved, and we believe that as Christians, we believe that when Christ told us to love each other as he's loved us, that that carries over all boundaries and all barriers and all obstacles. And we just want him to be happy and be loved, and that's what we want for him.
But does that include the right to marriage?
Yes, it does. I think that it covers all of that. And I think if our son chooses to find a partner that he feels he can spend the rest of his life with and be happy with, then that's what we want for him.
And at that point, we just have a few seconds left, Peggy, but what happens if the state of Indiana or the people in your community vote to prevent that?
Well, then I guess that Sean and his partner or whatever would have an opportunity to move to a state where he would be able to live his life the way he chooses. And from my personal standpoint, I feel comforted by the fact that the states have the opportunity to make those choices rather than the federal government dictate to me and my family and the rest of the nation what love and what marriage should be for all of us.
Peggy, thank you very much for the call.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye. Well, such a ruling might come if this case eventually goes to the Supreme Court, Ken Jost, very quickly.
Very quickly. There are 6 other states with lawsuits pending to legalize marriage. All of them are blue states in the current lexicon. We'll see what happens there.
Ken Jost, thank you very much for being with us. Ken Jost is the Supreme Court editor for CQ Press. He joined us here in Studio 3A. When we come back, we'll speak to advocates from both sides and take more of your calls. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the battle over gay marriage, what it means in the larger arena for and against gay rights. Whether you're for or against gay marriage, is this the most pressing gay rights issue for you? Are there other battlegrounds in schools, the workplace, or the courts that you think deserve more attention? You're, of course, invited to join the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Jay Sekulow. He's chief counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice, which opposes gay marriage. He's with us by phone from his office in Virginia Beach, and it's good of you to take the time to speak with us today.
I'm glad to do it, Neil.
How big a victory was this on Tuesday for those opposed to gay marriage?
Well, I think it was pretty significant. All 11 states passed, and the anticipation was that those that were advocating gay marriage thought they were going to win in Oregon, and it just didn't happen that way. And the numbers are very significant, as you've been reporting on. I mean, that you have upwards of 80% in some of the states opposing redefinition of marriage. So I think it was a pretty staggering statement.
And Oregon, of course, a blue state, a Democratic majority in the presidential election.
Correct, and I think that's what even makes it more. If you were advocating on the other side, it would be more challenging.
And obviously this was a significant issue in Ohio, the state which proved to be the key to the election.
It was. Interesting there. I think the end result, though, was about a 65-35 split or something close to that. Interestingly also that there were Democrats that voted for Senator Kerry based on those numbers that also, they voted for him, but they voted against the marriage issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this going to, you think, strengthen the push for an amendment to the federal Constitution?
Well, that's hard to say because, you know, it went down in both the House and the Senate. There just weren't the votes there. Now, you do have a different majority in the Senate now, but still you don't have the 67 necessary. So it'll be interesting to see whether there's a federal amendment, a push for a federal marriage amendment again. There may well be, or whether it's going to be the state amendments, which seems to be the trend right now.
And obviously this is going to be an issue at some point before the Supreme Court.
I think it will be, and it may not come up as a straight marriage challenge. I think what you may see is a situation where individuals in Massachusetts who have licenses that were duly issued by the state of Massachusetts after the Goodridge decision, coming to another state seeking recognitions of the licenses, and then finding that there was no full faith and credit given. It may be that kind of constitutional challenge that you see. I'm not so sure, Neil, it'll be a head-on, does the Constitution mandate same-sex marriage?
Right, and the full faith and credit, what you're referring to, is a practice by which each state recognizes what every other state does.
That's correct. I mean, normally if you got married in Tennessee and moved to New York, it's automatically recognized.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some more listeners on the line about this. And joining us now is Matt. Matt's calling from East Point, Michigan.
Hello. It's great to be on the air. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I just have a comment really with regard to the recent election and with regard to how successfully, whether it was intentionally or not, that the Republican Party was able to piggyback on this issue in a number of states to polarized voters to get out there and express their votes. And I think they worked against the Democratic Party. And I would caution the Democratic Party representatives, the leadership, to be very cautious the next time around in the next presidential election, to be wary of this sort of issue coming up and possibly polarizing voters against them.
Yeah, Jay Sekulow, this cited as a major component of the moral values that so many voters cited.
Yeah, and it was. And interestingly, I don't know if you've seen the reports yet, Neil, because maybe you were on the air when they came out, but President Clinton, had advocated to Senator Kerry to back the state's right to not recognize same-sex marriage, and he said he wasn't going to do that. And I think that played, and I think it did hurt them. And I do think it causes, you know, in one sense, I think those in the gay and lesbian community were making progress in their attempt for recognition, and an over-aggressive push towards marriage, I think, is hurting their case. And not so much in the courts of law, but in the courts of public opinion.
They were making progress, particularly on anti-discrimination issues.
Anti-discrimination, domestic partnerships. Most of us weren't reacting to the domestic partnerships. We said, oh, if a city or state wants to do that, they have the right to do it. But what happened is they pushed forward too aggressively on the, you know, it looks like, pushed on too aggressively to obtain the marriage license recognition. I think that really hurt.
If I make one more comment.
Sure, Matt, go ahead.
Gentlemen, just I totally agree with that, and I just feel that the gay community seems to be making a lot of progress. My girlfriend and I have differing opinions on the recent vote here in the state of Michigan on that issue. We are supportive of the civil unions and so forth. We feel the community is making progress. Just that, to be just a cautionary note, to please be aware of the forest for the trees and not push too hard too fast. And I think progress is being made.
Okay, Matt, thanks for the call.
Thanks so much.
Let's go now to Thomas. And Thomas is calling from Lake Geneva in Wisconsin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Ben.
Sure.
The reason that I'm calling in today is that I am a parent of two young children who were both adopted, and my partner and I went into the adoption together, although, like, the state law of Wisconsin does not allow two people, unmarried people, to adopt the same child. So that leaves us with a problem that one of us were only allowed to adopt the children. So that person was me. If something was to happen to me today, if I was to die in a car accident or if anything was to happen, my children could wind up back in foster care because there are no laws protecting my partner's right of the children.
Well, you know, I don't want to give you free legal advice, but I'll tell you this. All you need to do is specify in your will who the guardian of your children will be.
Okay. And that's so you can tell me that the will cannot be contested in any way, and well, those children are protected regardless?
Let me finish. If you specify in a will that you want a guardian for your children, and most people do that because that happens to a lot of single parents, that person's your request is not subject to challenge as long as it's a duly authorized will. And
okay.
You go to a good lawyer that knows what they're doing and draft a good will, but you should have no trouble there.
Okay, and then the second half of our situation is I'm a returning college student. I am actually a junior standing, and we recently purchased a new house. And since I am unemployed, I go to school full-time, and I care for the children as well.
Right.
I don't qualify for mortgage. So on the other hand, if something was to happen to my partner, we could be homeless because the house would be lost.
Well, let me
I don't qualify for mortgage.
See, these arguments, I understand your concern, and look, I'm not saying these aren't legitimate, but there's easy ways to handle that. Number one.
No, there is no easy way.
I don't get to answer your question. I can't help. And here's the easy way to handle the situation, and that is you. Number one, could be listed on the actual deed to state that you're joint tenants. And joint ownership. Then also, you just have your partner get adequate health insurance, life insurance, so that if something were to, and most people do this when you buy a house, because this could be true for anyone, a stay-at-home mom that isn't working and something happens with the house, you get life insurance, and they offer this, by the way, at closing, so that if something were to happen to the other co-owner, the insurance pays off the mortgage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're making this sound so simple, but
I've been practicing law for 25 years, and I've argued 11 cases at the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm not trying to make it simple. I'm giving you a reality check. Those arguments just don't hold water. There are legal ways to handle your relationships.
Okay. Thomas, thanks very much for the call.
What you were talking about can be contested, correct?
Then we're going to have to move on.
Life insurance cannot be, certainly, and a valid will can't be.
All right. Let's get one more caller on the air. David is with us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi.
Hi, David.
Yeah, I'm gay, and I haven't. I wasn't thinking much about the gay marriage referendum or anything like that, and I'm not like in a situation to get married right now anyway. But I wanted to share. I don't think a lot of people have thought about how that affects people individually. Because I started thinking about it, and I started feeling like America had just voted that I was not a legitimate person. And that I was not entitled to what everyone else is entitled to. And so that's been, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with that thought or where I'm going to go for there. But
David, did you feel similarly validated by the Massachusetts decision or by the picture of those scenes in San Francisco with so many gay couples lined up to get marriage licenses?
I'm not even sure offhand what the Massachusetts decision was.
Uh-huh.
I'm delivering pizza, so I'm missing... I'm catching bits and pieces of
Supreme Court ruling that gay marriage was legal under the Constitution in Massachusetts and must be legal.
And did that just happen with...
No, this happened earlier this year.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I had either forgotten about that or thought that this was canceling that out. I didn't know on that.
Jay Sekulow, David's point, this is certainly alienating to a large number of people who feel like they've just been... as David put it.
No one wants any American to feel like they're discriminated against, but the fact is in America, not everybody can get married. We don't let cousins marry. You have to be a certain age to get married. There are restrictions put in place. So I think what you've got is an overreaction to a cultural phenomenon, and the culture clearly has not caught up with where the lawyers for the gay and lesbian community are advocating. And I'm an advocacy lawyer, so I know this from my end of it. You've got to argue not just in the courts of law, but in the courts of public opinion. And they overshot this, and they got a pretty big negative. I mean, the Oregon vote, I think, is the most systematic of the problem, or symptomatic of the problem. They overshot the electorate on this, and it really hurt them.
Jay Sekulow, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, with us from his office in Virginia Beach in Virginia. Joining us now to talk about how the gay community is reacting is Michael Adams, Director of Education and Public Affairs for Lambda Legal. He's with us from our bureau in New York, and good of you to be with us today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
The amendments went down to defeat in all 11 states, including, as Jay Sekulow pointed out, in Oregon. Do you feel as if, as he was just arguing, the gay community was that too far out in front?
Well, you know, there's no question that, Tuesday was not a good day for us, but the fact is that the gay community does not need to apologize for wanting to be treated as equal citizens. Everybody wants that. That's what the gay community wants, and that's what the gay community has been fighting for. Tuesday was not our day, but we still remain very optimistic that looking at the longer term and at longer term trends, things are moving in the right direction in terms of recognition for gay and lesbian relationships.
So where do you think the fight goes next?
Well, you know, it's funny. I will agree with Jay Sekulow on one point, that the fight has to be both in the court of law and the court of public opinion. And it's important for the gay community to continue doing what it has been doing, which is to gradually win the hearts and minds of the American people on this issue. But one of the reasons why we're so optimistic about long-term trends is that we see more and more gay people coming out in visible ways, more and more same-sex relationships and same-sex couples being very visible. The more people who know that their brothers, their sisters, their neighbors, their friends are gay, the better we're going to do. And that happens more and more every day, which is why we can feel really positive about the longer term.
The vote in Oregon, though, must have been particularly stinging.
It was, there's no question, it was painful to lose Oregon. It was the state where we had the most hope. But it's interesting because there's something positive to see in Oregon as well. Oregon is the state where the gay community got organized earliest and did the hardest work and did the best one-on-one work. And it's the state where we did the best. And I'm convinced that had we had more time, we would have won Oregon. So it tells us, I think, what the formula for success is in the future, which is a lot more dialogue, a lot more reaching out to our friends and neighbors and family. And then we'll win those battles moving forward.
And earlier we heard from Kenneth Jost saying that the issue comes up next in several states that are also, like Oregon for that matter, blue states.
Absolutely. I mean, this issue is not going to go away. The fact is that, as I said earlier, gay people want the same thing everybody else wants, which is equal protection under the law, and that includes the protections of marriage for committed couples. We're not going to see it going away. There are a number of lawsuits pending, and there are public education campaigns across this country in which gay people will be able to reach out and talk to their friends and neighbors about this issue.
We're talking about the issue of gay marriage, which was defeated in 11 constitutional amendments on Tuesday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line. This is Ken. Ken's calling from Boise, Idaho.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Neil. Thank you. It's a privilege. Just wanted to make a quick statement about how states' rights versus the federal rights, I think it's discriminatory that we can't make a decision about the gay rights, that if we were to leave people, if slavery was left up to people back in the slave day, we could have had a slave state for a longer way. I just don't understand. I think that the federal government needs to step in and say that there is no discrimination, and I just had to comment.
Do you think that's an issue for the Congress or for the Supreme Court, Ken?
Supreme Court. Yeah. I think that we should address this issue. I think that, you know, we need to step up. We need to be responsible for our actions, and discrimination has no point in my place as an American.
Mm-hmm. And let's get a response from Michael Adams. Thanks for the call, Ken, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, I think the caller is raising a very good point. One of the things that's difficult about Tuesday is that we saw in 11 states the fundamental rights of a group of people being put up to popular vote. That's a really troubling concept, that whether we are equal as citizens should be up to a majority of voters on a given election day. The fact is that is what happened, and we saw the results, and we have a lot more work to do in terms of winning over the hearts and minds of the American people. But we certainly agree that the fundamental rights of any group of people, including gay people, should not be put up to a plebiscite.
The issue of abortion decided by the Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade, one reason people think there has been continuing opposition to that was the fact that it was a judicial fiat not decided and debated in legislatures by the representatives of the people.
Well, you know, we believe that both things have to happen. The courts have a very important role in this country, and that is to vindicate our fundamental constitutional principles of equality under the law and justice. But they're not alone. At the same time, dialogue with the American people has to be occurring. As I said before, I do agree that it's important that we win not only in the courts of law, but also in the courts of public opinion. Both have to occur together, and that's the strategy that we need to pursue.
Let's get another caller on the line. Amy's with us from Buffalo, New York.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I guess I have more of a question than a comment. I'm living in New York State right now, but I'm from Arkansas, where they did get to vote on the initiative for gay rights. But I didn't get a chance to vote here. Is there a reason why some states got to vote where other states didn't?
Michael Adams, various states put this on the ballot, and obviously many states did not.
Sure. I mean, there was a concerted effort by the Republican Party nationally and by local conservative groups to get this question onto the ballot in states where they believed it would help President Bush's reelection. That is why we saw it appearing in some states like Arkansas, where they calculated that a majority of voters would be supportive of such an amendment, and it did not occur in other states where they made a different calculation.
Yeah, and I guess I feel like it's not fair, almost, because people are coming out and saying that we, as a nation, because in 11 states that it was proposed that they were all put down, that as a nation we are against gay marriage, but in other states where it would have passed, they didn't even get a chance to vote on it.
Might have passed, Amy, but go ahead. Michael Adams, very quickly.
Well, so, you know, one really important point, exit polls show that 61% of those who voted on Tuesday actually support some form of legal recognition for gay and lesbian couples, not necessarily marriage, but some kind of legal recognition. That's where the nation is. That's a big step forward from where we've been in previous years. And so not only do I think those amendments would have fared better in some states, but even with voters on Tuesday, from the perspective of the gay community, we're moving in the right direction, even though we suffered a setback on Tuesday, no question.
Michael Adams, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
All right. Good being with you.
Michael Adams is Director of Education and Public Affairs for the Lambda Legal, and he was with us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from a short break, we've talked about what's going on with gay rights in the public sector. What about the private sector? More and more companies offer domestic partner benefits. Will a movement away from gay marriage change those policies? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email totn@npr.org. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, we're discussing gay rights. 11 states voted on amendments on Tuesday that banned gay marriage around the country in those states. Tuesday's election was a heavy blow to forces in the gay rights movement hoping for a government blessing for same-sex marriage. In the private sector, though, a growing number of companies are instituting same-sex benefits for employees. Joining us now is Seth Kilborn, National Field Director for the Human Rights Campaign, to talk about where gay rights stand in the private sector and how that might be affected by Tuesday's vote. He's with us from the HRC's offices in Washington. Good to have you on the program.
Good to be here.
How widespread are domestic partnership benefits now?
Well, increasingly, companies are offering domestic partnership benefits because they recognize that in order to attract the best employees and the best talent out there, they need to make sure that they offer benefits and have policies in place to protect all workers from discrimination. And a lot of companies are doing just that with their own internal non-discrimination policies as well as domestic partner benefits for same-sex couples.
And I was going to ask, you mentioned discrimination. Do anti-discrimination policies and domestic partnerships go hand in hand?
Sometimes they do, not always, but sometimes they do. I know that primarily we want to talk today about domestic partnership benefits, and those benefits are definitely being offered as part of, you know, an overall package of why a particular employee might be attracted to a particular company. And they are becoming increasingly important, and more companies are recognizing that and really, quite frankly, are ahead of certainly where the U.S. Congress is in terms of providing those benefits and protecting their gay and lesbian employees from discrimination.
And what benefits are we talking about? Health insurance, that sort of thing?
Usually we're talking about health insurance, exactly. Companies, for example, who offer health insurance to their employees usually have some sort of spousal benefits that can come along with it. In other words, the spouse of an employee can get on that employee's health insurance. And so with domestic partner benefits, usually what we're talking about is the ability of a partner, a same-sex partner, to also get on that health insurance. But there are other benefits as well, and sometimes there's pension benefits or other kinds of benefits depending on what the company offers.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a caller in on the conversation. Chris is with us from Newton, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to make a couple of points. My partner and I, who have been together for 15 years, were married on May 17th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. We have two children, 10-year-old twins. And I wanted to make the point that while the anti-marriage amendments purport to protect families, gay marriage really protects families. And I want to give two examples. One is Massachusetts predating the judicial decision. Massachusetts allows gay and lesbian parents to adopt children, both parents to adopt children, which gives them all the same protections as traditional families. And in addition to which, we were just able to purchase health insurance as a family, where beforehand I had to have one policy and my partner had to have a family policy. And as a result of that protection, we're going to save about $5,000 a year. And I think people ignore the fact that there are huge financial costs, or I should say there are hidden benefits that traditional families gain as a result of marriage, and gay families are denied those benefits, and they're very real and they're often very concrete.
Yeah. Seth Gilborn?
Well, Neil, I just wanted to get back to something that you had asked a minute ago about the numbers. 227 Fortune 500 companies offer domestic partnership benefits. 11 state governments offer those benefits. 125 city and county governments across the United States, and 276 colleges and universities, and then an additional 7,000 private sector companies currently offer domestic partnership benefits. So it is very widespread, and more companies are offering them every day. And I do agree with the caller that, marriage and the rights and benefits that come along with it do protect families, and that's what this issue is really all about.
Okay. Chris, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go now and speak with Robert. Robert's calling from Asheboro, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, both my wife and I have voted for the Republican Party. We split a little bit, but we were very pleased with the presidential outcome. And one of the driving forces certainly was the gay marriage amendments. We are not in favor of supporting gay marriages. It's really from a moral standpoint and issue. And we just don't feel like that is... not only is it not traditional, but it's just not a moral or a biblical point of a relationship. It's not what was designed in our society as a whole, not only locally or nationally, but globally.
As you listen to this conversation, though, Robert, what about civil union? What about the kinds of rights and the costs that our caller from Massachusetts was just talking about? Should gay couples have those same kind of rights?
I feel like as individuals, they should share the same rights as any other individual citizen of the United States, but I don't think that they should share the benefits of the traditional family. I don't feel like they should be able to adopt children and be, you know, leading the nation that they can rear straight or heterosexual children. I think that there's a great risk to raise those children in homosexual or lesbian relationships, and I just don't feel like that they, from a biblical standpoint, as an evangelical Christian, I just don't feel like that is a moral right. And as individuals, certainly love the sinner, hate the sin.
Robert, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we get one more caller in, and this is Mark. And Mark is calling from Landenburg, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My partner is of 8 years, by the way, is an officer of J.P. Morgan Chase, and we have domestic partnership benefits through J.P. Morgan Chase. I'm just shocked by Robert's call. I'm sorry. It's going to take me a few seconds to get over that. I don't care if it's called marriage. I don't care what people call it. And frankly, if it's immoral for Robert to be gay, then Robert, by all means, don't be gay. But if I go into a hospital, you know, my brothers and sisters are great. They love my partner. I love my brothers and sisters. But I want my partner in the hospital to visit me and to make decisions. Same thing. For my partner, we love our families. Our families love us. That's great. But we are a unit. Also, something that you know, we can take care of ourselves legally, but having family members over, for instance, my partner's niece, who's 33 years old, visited us and said, you know, Uncle so-and-so, if your dog ever dies, or if you ever die, I want your dog. I said, well, honey, we'll both have to die, you know. It's unnerving because these are, you make certain bonds in life. You know, your dogs, your family, the people and pets that are dear to you, and all that can be taken away just because you're gay. And that's not right. And I'm, frankly, I'm fed up with the attitudes in this country. I'm absolutely fed up, and that's about it. Thank you.
Okay, Mark. Thanks for the call.
Well, I mean, I think the caller raises a very important point, and that is that gay and lesbian families are traditional families, and gay and lesbian couples are raising millions of kids across this country. And despite, I think, what the previous caller had to say, these families are traditional. And as the caller from Pennsylvania pointed out, he's been with his partner for many years, and they have built a life together. And they are a family, and I think that is the reality of American family today. It does include gay and lesbian couples, and no amount of moral judgment is going to change that.
Do you think that the vote on Tuesday and what's being taken as a public rejection of the idea of gay marriage, is that going to affect companies' willingness to extend these benefits, more companies?
Well, quite honestly, I think it could, although we don't know ultimately what the effects of some of these amendments are going to be, because they go well beyond defining marriage. In Ohio and in Michigan and in all of the other states, with the exception of Oregon, already prohibited marriage. There hasn't been any marriages in all of those states. So this notion that somehow these amendments are addressing the marriage issue, I think, is not entirely true. They go well beyond that, especially in places like Michigan and Ohio, where the amendments are incredibly broadly written. Quite frankly, it's a litigator's dream. These amendments will be litigated for years and years and years because nobody knows exactly what they mean. Clearly, political subdivisions within these states are going to be not be allowed to offer domestic partnership benefits. That we're pretty sure of. But the ultimate effect on private employers is not entirely clear because they are so broadly written, because they are so vague, because they go well beyond the definition of marriage. These things are going to be litigated for a long time to come.
Seth Kilborn, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Seth Kilborn, National Field Director for the Human Rights Campaign, with us from their headquarters here in Washington.